But we are continuing our series through the season of Lent, and I'm titled today's message, Whitewashed Tombs. Now, I know it's a bit intense to take these readings, they're called the Seven Woes, and Jesus is saying, woe to you, Pharisees and Sadducees and scribes. And really what this passage is Jesus is judging and calling into question the way that these teachers of the law and of the scriptures have been teaching the people. And so it is intense, but for our benefit through this season, the main goal for us, I think, is to just see where they've influenced us. Okay, so I don't think the heart of what the Lord's doing in our parish right now is to go, let's go on a Pharisee hunt amongst our parish and find out who are the Pharisees. I don't think that's what he's doing. I think what he's doing is helping us identify where this kind of teaching sounds like wisdom, sounds like help. It sounds healthy. But it gets in us like a venom, like a bite, and it's causing us to be sick from the inside out. Now, last week we looked at this idea that their teaching ties up heavy burdens on people and that these teachers don't lift a finger to help. And part of the reason what Jesus is trying to do is kind of unveil how this system, this way of living, is actually crushing the soul and the heart. That it puts all of this pressure on you. And all the focus and the emphasis is on you to be good enough, perfect enough, strong enough, beautiful enough, put together. Now, when we look at it, part of what's happening is Jesus is putting his finger on it to say, this is not a way to keep living. You can't keep doing this because it's a cycle that keeps going around and around and around, putting pressure on your heart and on your abilities. And the focus is on you instead of the focus being upon God and his goodness and his strength and his sufficiency and his great accomplishments for your life. But if we think about the way the natural world functions, trees, plants, there isn't this worry of, am I growing fast enough? Am I bearing enough fruit? Does the tree in your backyard worry about how many inches it's put on? It doesn't. We do, because we bought into this system that's me-focused. Now, the text that we're looking at today, Jesus is going to highlight a few key things. And I thought, as I was working through it, even just writing it out, I started to see this is a big eye-opener to the system that this creates and that's in me. I think for a lot of years, I've tried to escape external expectations. When you grow up with a hard-handed father with very high expectations, you feel those expectations, don't you? And then you go into a job and you feel those expectations. And often when kids rebel, they're rebelling against the pressure. I can't handle the pressure, so I'm going to run away. I'm going to do my own. This stuff is in us. These systems of pressure and expectation that are always pushing on our hearts. And then you find out, you become an adult, you know, you grow up, you have your own space, maybe you own your own business, you're sick of working for other people. But then you realize that the expectation doesn't go away. All the external pieces are gone, but it's still inside of me. So what do I do when it's inside of me? And this is really what Jesus is doing, is as he breaks down this system that the Pharisees have been leading, it exposes all the people underneath it and how it's crushing their hearts. So let's start. Let's turn to verse 25. Jesus says this. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. The emphasis of the teaching of the Pharisees is always, I've been trying to figure out how to say this phrase without saying this phrase, and I can't. But I'm not going to say the phrase. But get your stuff together. Right? Get your stuff, get your life together. That's the big emphasis, is get it together. Clean the outside. Every problem is solved through personal effort. It's about output. It's about putting on a good show. And the answer, the question that comes up with every problem is, what am I going to do? What do I need to do? What do I have to do? It's not a fundamental default to go, who is God? What has God done? What will God do? How do I trust him? So the default of me, 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 what do I do, is the emphasis of the Pharisees. And the goal is to just have a good outward-looking life. And so much of their teaching falls into the categories of do this and don't do this. Right? And it's everything. It's down to how you should manage your schedule, your diet, how you should sacrifice, how you should handle your finances, and your tithing, your prayers, your clothing. The don'ts are what you should stay away from, don't touch, don't participate with, don't be known to be around. You don't want to be around sinners or sick people. You don't want to eat certain kinds of food. And we easily go, wow, those religious systems are so oppressive. But Pinterest and Facebook do the same thing. Okay, they put all this emphasis on what do you eat, what do you eat, what do you eat, but don't you, don't eat. That's often conflicting information, isn't it? You read one article and it's like, you need more healthy carbs. And you read another article and it says, no carbs, they're killing you. Right? So it's all about these do's and don'ts. And we're trying in our life to get the right information, make the right decisions, and manage it all. And it's quite stressful. And Jesus is saying, instead of all of this focus on what you're doing on the outside, how you look, what your house looks like, what your house smells like. Right? Because we can obsess over how it looks and what other people think of it. Jesus is pushing to say, take care of what's inside. Inside is what matters. Inside is what defines the outside. But the Pharisees are putting all this emphasis on what's outside, and they're avoiding the inside issues. So, a system that says, it's all about you, and what you do, and what you accomplish, and every problem is solved through more effort. Your primary goal is to white knuckle it through life. Just keep going. How's that feel? Is that like a good yoke? Is that a good tone to life? You just gotta get through this with enough effort. What kind of culture does that create in life? There's a lot of intensity, anxiety, fear, control. Because when you're white knuckling it, can you handle more variables? Can you handle, let's say, my life? Can I handle a kid interrupting? No. You turn those white knuckles on to the thing that's interrupting, you're like, stop it! Leave me alone! For the record, I don't mean I'm punching my kids. I don't punch my kids. Right? But that kind of lifestyle is very intense in everything around you that brings potential pressure or uncleanness to make you dirty or to ruin your system is a threat, isn't it? Life becomes a threat instead of life being about possibility, about gifts, about receiving, about enjoying. So what we're looking for, I think last week starts that process is to go, where's the white knuckle? In your heart, in your thoughts, you may not be showing it physically, but inside you, where are you white knuckling? Okay? Now, when Jesus then pushes to say, the inside issues are the ones that really matter, and in your case, he's saying to the Pharisees, it's greed and self-indulgence. Now, that sounds like, whoa, that's a big statement. But when we look at it, a system that makes you white knuckle, you get tired. You get worn out, don't you? You get exhausted from all the effort. Because the two things that it focuses on is, number one, my self-determination. I have to make my life happen. And number two, effort is my single resource. It's all about my effort. So my life is determined by me and my effort. You see that? So when that's the case, and your effort starts running low, you run out of energy, you run out of wisdom, or if you're white knuckling it, your effort's creating more problems. Right? Because your effort starts to look like this. Harsh, hard, angry, desperate. Have you ever felt that? Where you put effort to something, you're like, I just made this whole thing worse. So when that's the case, it creates deep internal need. Right? So if my effort is my sole resource, and my goals are to be self-confident and self-sufficient and self-satisfied, then the highest value and priority in my life becomes myself. And when faced with performance insufficiencies, we equate them to a shortfall of, and this is big cultural language today, self-care and self-love. So this is the language our culture puts to it. We need more self-care and more self-love. Which leads to me saying things like, I'm so tired of my responsibilities. I need this to keep going. I deserve this thing because it's self-care. I have to have this in order to keep handling my job. I need this to achieve this. So Lent, when we fast things, it kind of reveals that, doesn't it? The things that we're dependent upon. The things that we need to support this system of self are the most dangerous kinds of greed and self-indulgence. Because they're justified. We justify them because we need them to prop up our responsibilities. Now, what makes it so dangerous is that it's rooted in a truth that has been twisted. So the truth here is that the resource we lack is for ourself to be loved. To be deeply, meaningfully loved. That's true. The other truth is that our deepest self needs to be cared for and provided for. That's true. We need to be loved. We need to be cared for and provided for. We need to be resourced. And the things that we say are true. We need rest. I need rejuvenation. Those are all true, but the lie or the twist of that truth is that love and that care needs to be from me to me. That's the twist of that truth. Yes, we need love. Yes, we need care. But to say I need self-love and self-care just continues to perpetuate the system. The system we're trying to escape. The system that's wearing us down and breaking us. Instead, what we need is to be loved, cared for, provided for, resourced from somewhere better, bigger than ourselves. I don't mean to overstate this, but I think it's a cancerous loop. Cancerous meaning that self-feeding on self is self-destruction. Right? So if you go, I need self. So let's think of it more literally. I'm hungry. I'm starving. I put out a ton of energy today and I need to eat. You know what that feels like? Right? I am hungry. And we turn to ourselves and we go, and take a bite out of our own bottle. Maybe, it's a bit of a sugary thought, but maybe it fills the stomach for a moment, but have we not created a deeper need by doing so? Right? The body can't feed on the body. That's cancer. That's literally what cancer does, is it's a part of the body that turns and feeds on the rest of the body. But this is the way our culture exists and promotes and encourages you to live your life. Now, wealthy people will express that, you know, I noticed in our area, spirituality is a bit of a tourist industry here. You can tour around different spirituality things. Right? I tried chakra this week. I tried yoga this week. Different spirit, if you can afford all those classes. Or you can go to Time Mare, number one spa in Canada. Self-care, self-love. Right? And now you realize I need this. I actually need this to continue my life. This needs to be a monthly routine for me. So that's going to be a big chunk of your budget. Depending on your budget, I guess. It takes a big chunk out of my budget. Hey, or maybe I need consistent, right, trips to Italy. I need to go 6 times a year. I need to have their pasta. It's self-care and self-love for me. Drugs and alcohol. The wealthier communities tend to statistically be prescription drugs and alcohol. But then we use language like replenish, refresh, recenter. Our more poor demographics depend upon Netflix, internet, Instagram, social media. Right? Drugs and alcohol on a consistent basis to numb. Downtime, recharge, me time. This is the language that we use. But all of it is to take time to reinforce the ideology and the system that I have to take care of me. I have to provide for me, achieve for me, be enough for me. All it does is prop up the self for one more day of effort. Now, statistically, what we're looking at is people more and more are actually blocking out, budgeting time in their life and making priority for internet time. Internet addiction is a growing addiction amongst the young. We need the time for me time. I need downtime. So what this does, though, is it props us up. All we're doing is hiding from the stress and the pain and the expectation of our life. So that tomorrow I can go and give it another good effort work really hard, try and achieve more, try and control more, be better, beautiful, presentable, elaborate, Facebook-worthy life. That's what whitewashing is. This is what Jesus is getting at. We're focused on propping up the outside accomplishments. We're focused on making it look better than it is. So what's the truth behind it all? What are we whitewashing? Take a moment. Maybe just close your eyes. What are we whitewashing and propping up? The hurting, failing, broken parts. The tired parts of you. The parts of you that are actually growing and increasing inside of you, not going away. Because the system keeps feeding on the broken parts. So do we care and love for those broken internal places? No, we just numb them, quiet them, try and explain to them new information that they just need to keep going, demand of them, motivate them, discipline them, and if necessary, emotionally punish them. Get it together. So what are we whitewashing? Inside are all these parts of our heart that are looking for love, looking for care, looking for resources, looking for help, looking to be known, and all we've wanted from them is what they can accomplish, what they can output. And when they didn't output, we beat them. We said, get it together. Stop feeling that. Stop thinking that. Just do the job and get it done. Lighten up. And we do that over and over and over, day after day after day after day. And you know what we do? We kill parts of our hearts. We lock them up. We hide them away. The parts of us that will cry because they're soft and broken. The parts of us that are angry because they've been deeply wronged and traumatized. We lock them away like unsightly children. But we do it to our own hearts. We're whitewashing a tomb. A tomb full of dead parts of our hearts. And this is what Jesus is explaining. He's going, you just keep pushing effort and you keep killing the most beautiful, softest parts of who you are inside. This creates a whitewashed tomb. The heart becomes a divided self. The parts of you that produce, you like. You approve of. You encourage them. The parts of you that you don't like, that underperform, that are embarrassing sometimes, what do you do with them? Try and bury them. Hide them. Keep them down there. And the true you, the true self, lies in the middle, watching, going, which one of these am I? Am I the one that just needs to keep going and perform and be good? Or am I these broken parts that so desperately need to be loved, be cared for, be healed, and be restored? Who am I? And those are the moments that we're avoiding most of all. Is where we stand in the middle of our heart. You know the part of you that notices other parts of yourself? Do you know that? Can I say that? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That part of you, that's the true self. That's you. And Jesus is uniting himself to you. But then there's these broken, scattered parts of us, isn't there? The super hard-working, responsible me. That's what I want you to see. And then the other me, the broken me, the sad me, the grieving me, I want you to see that. And the true you going, which one of these is me? So this divided self, broken into little pieces, trying to figure out how to continue outward strength, but manage inward need. This is what Jesus is identifying when he says, hypocrisy. Now hear me, he's not, in our culture, a hypocrite's like the worst thing in the world you could say. But here's how I'm a hypocrite. I'm a hypocrite because I go, I want to be the strong me, but I know there's all of this broken me. And the hypocrite is not someone who has broken, you're not a hypocrite because you have broken parts. Okay? Hypocrisy isn't having weakness and brokenness. Hypocrisy is pretending that I don't. And it's putting all my energy to living with facades and veneers created through my accomplishments and my effort. So hear me. I am publicly saying I am a hypocrite. I was a hypocrite this morning. As you were walking in the doors, I was a hypocrite. I was thinking it through going, I gotta be strong enough for it. But I also have all these broken parts inside. What if I'm not strong enough for them today? That's gonna be really embarrassing. But you can see what dethrones the power of that teaching is what? Confession. Is bringing it out of the dark and being honest about the fact I'm not up here because I've got this all together and I'm perfect. I'm here to talk about the one who does, and his name is Jesus. So, one last thing before we close. So if hypocrisy isn't having weakness and brokenness, hypocrisy is pretending that I don't. What's this other thing that Jesus claims that they are, which is lawlessness? These are the two sides of our divided hearts, our outward strength and our need to look good is what leads us to that hypocrisy, hiding the parts that aren't there. Our inward needs that aren't yet fulfilled and satisfied, but instead are being pushed aside and ignored and trying to be hidden and locked away in the deep parts of your heart, those inward needs come out like lawlessness. Lawlessness is essentially doing anything and everything in order to survive. That's what lawlessness is. Anyone notice on TV that dystopian, post-apocalyptic TV shows and movies are really popular in this generation? Like zombie movies, TV shows, The Walking Dead, and all this stuff. They're like top shows. I don't know if you knew this. That's essentially what, I think it's actually outworking a bit of a fantasy around lawlessness, which is going, I have complete freedom to do whatever I need to do to survive. Because those deep, needing, broken places in our hearts, that's how they function. They go, I've been locked up, I've been starved, I've been beaten, I've been ignored, and I desperately need help. And they will force their way out of the prisons we create, force their way past the veneers and the facades, and they will take care of themselves. Anyone ever had that? That undeniable urge to do something, to get something, to fulfill a deep wound, that's what lawlessness is. It's desperate self-provision. When you go, I'm doing the thing I know I hate, but it's the only thing I know that touches the pain. even just for a moment. That is extreme self-care and self-love. So, that leaves us in this spot, with this inner world. The true self, the whitewashing self, and the tomb self, the deep broken needs within. Where does Jesus meet us in all of this? The beauty is Jesus actually is the only one able to unite. Because Jesus is so perfect and so good and does what is right in his life, he can appease effort, the need for effort. I can rest going, Jesus has done everything. I don't have to. But Jesus also goes to the tomb, all the broken, painful parts of me, and he isn't afraid of what's inside. Because that's what we are, aren't we? We're afraid of what's inside. We're afraid of the trauma. We're afraid of the pain. We're afraid how needy we are. We're afraid how weak we are, how broken we are. Jesus goes into that tomb confident, able to heal. So when we walk our way through Matthew, and we're going to see Jesus' goodness on display, but we're also going to see Jesus' healing on display. And that's why. He's going to appease the part of us that needs to always strive. He's going to appease the deeply broken part of us that needs to be healed. And he unites himself to our true self, gathering in the striving parts of our heart, gathering in the exiled parts of our heart, the broken, weak, hurting parts, and brings them all together in him. Perfect. Creating again wholeness, healing the divided heart in a way that we never could. And our efforts certainly didn't get us anywhere near. That's the good news of Jesus. Drawing in the parts of you that need to work, and drawing in the parts of you that need to heal, and making them one in him. Turn on the button.